Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
A very early timeout. Ginobili lost it. Raiders with a steal. Durant inside. Boy, this place is deafening already.
They realize that they have greatness on the ropes, and they're getting it done on the defensive end.
Westbrook way off the brick. Ibaka has to put it back up. Adams right there.
I didn't have a different mindset. We know what we have to do to beat this team. They're a great team. They've been winning for 10-plus years at the same pace, and just proud of our guys. Everybody stepped up. Every game, it was different for us. We came out and competed at a high level.
Oh, we didn't dominate the series. I thought, you know, both teams came out, made it a game every game, except for maybe the first and the last ones. It was a grind-out series. It was a playoff basketball every game, and we came out and took on a challenge. They presented to us, which was tough. We just played our brand of basketball, man, the same basketball we've been playing all season. This wasn't our championship. You know, we were confident coming in here, happy that we're moving forward, and then we had another opportunity to play again, and we're excited about it.
We had a conversation, and he asked me if I wanted to play, and I told him I always want to play, and he said, all right, go for it. I'll get to that after I get out of here and figure life out.
Not shocked, because we knew that maybe we were going to get away with round one, okay, but whoever we were playing in the second round was going to be tough.
I guess once you're past those 35, 36, it happens, so I'm taking my time as always. And of course, it's been an amazing run. We all enjoy playing with each other. We've accomplished amazing things. We won 67 games. And of course, it's disappointing when you don't end up, you know, winning the last game. But only one team can do it. In 14 seasons, in my case, it happened a lot of times. But I'm still proud of having played with those guys for so many years and winning so many games.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Well, that's one approach to handling a post-game press conference. That's one way to do it. Talk about how, you know, it's tough to not be the one team that is left standing. Yeah, I get all of that. Yeah. Another way to do it would be just to berate, embarrass, be sarcastic, and act like a complete and total jerk to every reporter who asks you a question. Yes, that's what I'm talking about, Greg Popovich. Way to step up and set the example for all of us. Welcome to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Round of applause, if you would, please, for Kevin Durant and the Oklahoma City Thunder for making a profit of me, and I don't mean P-R-O-F-I-T. They would never make any money off of me, but they made a profit, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, out of me because it was literally 1 week ago, going into Game 3. That I made the bold statement that I made. At least I considered it bold, because all season long I've been saying I think the Spurs and the Warriors in the Western Conference Final will be an epic battle, and I think the Spurs might actually have enough to beat the Warriors. I think that's a team that I could pick to beat the Warriors, which I wanted to see happen. I want to see the Warriors lose. Still do. And I made that statement many, many times throughout the course of this NBA season right here on the air. And I got to tell you, I felt very strongly about it, that could be and would be the case. And it was last Friday on this very show, and Jim Cushlin, who is here now, was not here at the time. He was, you know, off that afternoon, and it was Ben Lahowski and Chris Lemieux who were filling in, and we were kicking this thing around a little bit. And if you recall, Game 3 of the Western Conference Final was that 1 week ago tonight. It was last Friday. The series between the Thunder and the Spurs, which is now over, was at that time one game apiece. And those two games were, of course, game changers for a lot of people. After the San Antonio Spurs won Game 1 by 43 points. Let me say that number again. 43 points. They blew the Thunder off of the court and out of San Antonio. It was an embarrassment of epic proportions, and I'm certain every member of the Oklahoma City Thunder would describe it in exactly the same way. It was embarrassing. They just got manhandled as if they didn't belong there, and the Spurs, who had won 67 regular season games before blowing right through the first round series as they did against the Grizzlies, it was, it was not even funny. It was an embarrassment. And when on Wednesday night last, not this past, but the previous Wednesday night, of course, Wednesday night, the Thunder came back in San Antonio from that 43-point arse whipping and took it to the five-time champion Spurs. Took it to Tim Duncan, Manu, the man who would go on to be a couple of days ago named the runner-up for the MVP award, Kawhi Leonard, Tony Parker, LaMarcus Aldridge, who was just impossible to stop in Game 1. And quite frankly, he was about the only Spur who was impossible to stop still in Game 2. But they took it to those boys, and they won. It was kind of a controversial ending, as we know. The NBA admitted blowing five different calls or missing five different calls in the closing 13 seconds. We all remember we talked about Dion Waiters pushing off on Manu Ginobili, pushing him in the chest to create space so that he could inbound the ball in what could have been the game-deciding possession. But all I know is that San Antonio came out of that first game red hot, very, very much different looking in Game 2, looking much more human, looking much more mortal, if you will. And Oklahoma City showed me some heart, some spirit, and quite honestly, some talent that says, you know, I think, despite my season-long prediction of a Spurs over Warriors Western Conference final, I'm about to change that because I don't think the Spurs are going to get there. After the heart and the talent that Oklahoma City showed in Game 2 last Friday, I said, I'm calling it now. It's one game apiece, so this is even. It's not like somebody has a 2-1 lead, and so I'm making some bull. It was 1-1, dead even. I said, I think Oklahoma City's winning this series. I said, I think they're going to win tonight at home, which would have been Friday Game 3 last Friday, and they're going to win on Sunday at home and come back to San Antonio up 3-1, and they're winning this series. Now, as it turned out, obviously, that night, Friday night, they didn't get the win at home. San Antonio came back. Oklahoma City was unable to hold a fourth quarter lead, which has been their Achilles heel all season long against top competition. They are not a good fourth quarter team. And they let it get away. But they didn't let that get them down either. And as we know, the rest is history. Three straight Oklahoma City wins. One in their building, one back in San Antonio, and then last night, the blowout to end the San Antonio Spurs' tremendous 67 regular season win season and potential matchup with the 73-win Golden State Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. Kevin Durant, last night and in game number four, in games 4 and 6, bookending the game by Russell Westbrook in game number 5. Kevin Durant was absolutely unstoppable. San Antonio Spurs had no answer for him. The reigning defensive player of the year two times, Kawhi Leonard, couldn't chase Kevin Durant down to save his life. Durant was constant motion. He was constant energy. From one side of the court to the other, from the post to the wing to the top, driving, stepping back as only he can with that 6'11 frame and that feathery, silky, smooth jump shot that he has. Kevin Durant destroyed Greg Popovich. And in Game 6 yesterday, he scored the second highest point total ever to eliminate a Greg Popovich-coached team from the playoffs. Kobe Bryant once scored 39 in an elimination game against the Spurs, coached by Popovich. Last night, Kevin Durant's 37 took care of business as well. They had a 28-point lead at one point in the second half. That was as big as it got. The Spurs actually cut it to 13, I think 11, actually. 11 at one point in the fourth.
That's what they cut it to.
That what it was?
Yep.
Before the Thunder and Kevin Durant again and Russell Westbrook, they just opened it right back. They hit the gas pedal again and pushed that 11 back to 13, back to 15, 16, and they coasted home with an unbelievable win. So I bring all of that up because it wasn't the seven-game masterpiece that I thought we were going to see, but it was a six-game masterpiece, primarily painted by the Thunder. I thought it would be a dual effort between two great, great teams that would go seven, and it was just going to be a tremendous series, and actually it wasn't as close as the six games indicated that it would be. Especially when you look at the final yesterday and you look at the way the course of that game went. The Thunder blew the Spurs out by halftime. That game was over. As a matter of fact, in the second half, if you wanted to keep score, the Spurs won the second half 68-58 and still lost by comfortable double digits. That's how badly the Thunder outplayed them from the opening tip last night. And so I was just very, very happy for Kevin Durant to see him get a shot now to get back to a second finals. I really hope he gets the opportunity to do that for two reasons. One, I think he is the most underappreciated superstar of his era. And it's unfair to me that that he doesn't get the credit and the kudos that he deserves. He does. He's got one MVP, and you say, hey, that's a lot of kudos. Sure, it is. But he never earns the respect on the national stage that is reserved for the likes of LeBron James, certainly now for Steph Curry, certainly over the course of the first 5 years or so of Kevin's career, Kobe Bryant. You know, the true superstars that everybody talks about. Kevin Durant is just not, and maybe it's because he is titleless, and LeBron James is not. He's got two, and Kobe has five, and Steph has his now, and he's going for two. You know, there are reasons, I suppose, but Kevin Durant has always been, to me, one of the most underappreciated, underrated, unassuming, uncontroversial, uncocky, and I know I'm making up some words in some ways here, humble superstars that you're ever going to see. He reminds me in some ways, not quite to the level of the flat effect, never show excitement, never show sadness look on Tim Duncan's face, but close to that in terms of how he just stays even keel most of the time, almost all of the time. A couple of moments here and there where he said some things to reporters about frustration with this or that or the other thing. And say, man, that's very out of character for Kevin Durant. That's why he's not exactly like Duncan in that regard. But he has been just a model citizen as well as a superstar. And I just don't think he ever has gotten the attention he deserves, even on this Oklahoma City team. In part because Oklahoma City also features Russell Westbrook, one of the other top five or six players, not position players, not just point guards, but five or six players in the NBA. And some say that Russell Westbrook's star shines even brighter than Kevin Durant's. After all, Westbrook was the walking triple-double this year. Westbrook was the 18-time triple-double stat sheet stuffer this season. Some said at the beginning of the year, maybe the first quarter or two of the season, some said, you know, he might be in the MVP hunt right up there neck and neck with Curry. And as it turns out, he did finish fourth, and he got way more votes than Kevin Durant. And while Russell Westbrook is indeed a special, remarkable talent, I will again say to you, he is not the straw that stirs that drink. In my view, if Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant split up, and that's possible with Durant being a free agent this summer, but if they end up on different teams, Russell Westbrook is going to become very, very similar in my mind to James Harden, who also left Oklahoma City because he wanted to be the man that stirred his own drink. He didn't like being second fiddle or third fiddle, as it were. He went to Houston, and what did he do? Tremendously successful, 28 points a game, one of the leading scorers in the league, one of the most unstoppable players offensively in the league. But not a guy who makes anybody around him better, Not a guy who is a real leader. Not a guy who is in control and composed. A guy who is just out there to get his, and he's pretty reckless while doing it. Now, I won't say that Westbrook and Harden are the same guy, because Westbrook, again, being the triple-double machine that he has been, is a guy who does dish the ball. He does make other players better around him in that regard. But his tendency, his MO, if you will, method of operation, modus operandi, if you want to go Latin, is to get out of control oftentimes for long stretches or long enough stretches in crucial situations where he costs his team as much as he carries it. Turnovers, reckless ball handling, bad shot decisions, having these, you know, big shooting games where there's 20 misses, those kind of things tend to follow Russell around, or Russell kind of brings them with him. So as great as he is, tremendous as he is, his star overshadowing that of Kevin Durant to me is just wrong. It's egregious. It's something that I don't want there to have to be a Batman and Robin. I'm not saying it has to be. Maybe they can be 1A and 1B, but the straw that stirs the Oklahoma City drink is Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant deserves better than that. And if he decides to leave Oklahoma City after the season, whatever it holds, of course, if it holds a championship, I'm sure he's going to re-sign and defend it. But if you know, they come up short against the Warriors, or if they make it to the finals and he loses to LeBron for the second time in his career, as we know it happened in Miami, and he decides, hey, I'm going to take the money elsewhere and start my own thing someplace, or join a team that is already really good but doesn't have the superstar to put them over the top, the closer, if you will. If he decides to do that and go his own way, I'm betting you, the KD carries that team to a final and to a championship before Russ can in OKC as the central star, if you will. So I'm just very happy for Kevin Durant. I hope he's able to take down Steph Curry. I know that the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals have a decided advantage, and that is Steph Curry. The Thunder have not been able to stop him in any time they've played, and they've played three times this year, as you know. And the Thunder can't stop him. The Thunder can't guard Steph Curry. But the good news for OKC is the Warriors have not been able to guard Kevin Durant either, not even a little bit. He is their kryptonite. He is their X factor. He is their whatever you want to call it. So I hope it is a spectacular series like I thought this one was going to be, and that Oklahoma City could get it done. All right, so welcome to the extravaganza, an opening extended monologue on last night, in large part because I'm just such a fan of what happened, and also because I've missed enough predictions for crying out loud, and I own them. I own them, and I'll eat them on live radio. Serve up the crow when I do, that when I get one right, and it makes me feel good, especially considering it's something I wanted to have happen. I wanted to point that out. And thanks to a couple of folks on Twitter who pointed it out, too, that calling that when it was 1-1, that the Thunder would upset the Spurs is a good call, and I'm glad that it happened that way. So we're going to talk some more NBA on this program. Make no mistake about that. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so, maybe 10, we're going to talk with a gentleman from PoundingTheRock.com, which is a Spurs SB Nation site. Michael Erler is his name. We're going to talk to him about the elimination of the Spurs last night. Going to talk to him about what went wrong against OKC. But also, in addition to what went wrong against the Thunder, we're going to talk about Greg Popovich. And we're going to talk about the future also. Tim Duncan. Is Tim Duncan done? Manu Ginobili? Done? That's the question, of course. Everybody is asking. We're talking about two of the elder statesmen in the league. Ginobili's been doing this for 14 years. Duncan has been doing this for, what, 19 or 20 now? Kobe obviously called it quits after his 20th season. Going actually in the middle of the season, he decided early on. But Tim Duncan, does he feel like he's got more tread on the tires? Does he want to come back and make another run at it next year with a very still evolving? They're not aging. A lot of people are saying the Spurs showed a ton of age. I don't think so. Kawhi Leonard's not old. Danny Green's not old. Patty Mills not old. LaMarcus Aldridge is not old. They still got a core of guys that are big time participants, big time players that join the graybeard crowd, if you will, in getting to 67 wins this year. So what's the future for those guys? And then we're going to talk about the coach, Greg Popovich. And we're going to talk about his post-game press conference that has a lot of people in my business, this business, sports radio business, or just sports broadcasting, blogging, writing, columns, et cetera, business. Those of us who do opinion for a living. It's got a lot of people saying, you know, how come Cam Newton got slammed for being such a poor sport at his post-championship game press conference, and Greg Popovich is just getting laughed at? People are laughing at the way he embarrassed media members and smarted off to them when they're just doing their jobs. Why is that? Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm not laughing at him. I cringed when I listened to that post-game press conference. I cringed when I listened to it earlier again today. I cringed when I played it again before we started this show, just because it was something I knew we were going to talk about and I wanted to hear it again. And I'm going to cringe when I play it for you live, right here on the radio, because it's not okay. Why does he get away with it? Why does he get away with it and Cam Newton not? I'm sure there are a lot of reasons. One of them has to be body of work, five-time champion. You don't question guys like that, guys who are considered royalty in their industry. Get some pass, get some free passes. They were talking about this morning on Lebatard's show. Certainly, his status as one of the ultimate winners in this game, not just today, but historically as a five-time champion, earns him a little bit of slack in the same way that Bill Belichick is cut slack when he has post-game or midweek interviews in which he completely dismisses the press, doesn't want to talk to them, gives you one-word mumbled answers or two- or three-word mumbled answers, or ignores your very well-thought-out, fair, investigative question about his team or the situation with the, well, we're getting prepared to play the Jets now. You know, blowing people off, being just completely rude and disrespectful to the media doing their jobs. Belichick gets away with it. Why 4 rings? Popovich gets away with it. Why 5 rings? Newton didn't do that. Newton just got up and left, which was a little bit of a different story there. But the comparison being made today, I think, is a fair one. Should Popovich get off with this, get away with this? What Popovich did last night, in my opinion, was actually, and I like him, I've defended him. Our friend Dennis Maniloff can't stand Popovich, in large part for these kinds of things. He has said so many times, and I get it. He doesn't like him at all, but I've defended him. I've defended Pop saying this, that, or the, whatever the reason was, I have. I'm not going to defend him now, because what he did last night was very, very, very close to Marshawn Lynch Super Bowl week. I'm just here so I don't get fined. I don't care how good your question is. I don't know how well thought out it is. I'm going to answer them while embarrassing you because I just don't want to be here. I'm only here because it's part of my contract, and I don't want to get fined. If I could walk away from you right now the way Newton did, I would, but I don't want to get fined. So as long as I got to sit here and endure you, I'm going to embarrass you. And that's exactly what he tried to do to reporters last night. I think it's wrong, and I'm calling him out for it. So I got all of that from last night's series alone. We haven't even gotten anywhere near LeBron as he gets trying to figure out who he's going to play tonight, Miami and Toronto. Hopefully we'll settle things if Toronto can close out the Heat and win that one in six. I'm sure it would be very pleasing to the Cavs and get back on the court on Sunday, because if they don't, then they got to play Sunday, Toronto and Miami at Game 7, and the Cavs Eastern Conference Final won't start until Tuesday. And you know they're just champing at the bit to get back on the court. But in the meantime, while they're not playing, LeBron is still talking. Come to find out, he's not happy. Not just about Steph Curry getting the MVP, as we discussed yesterday, but about something that happened 3 years ago. We'll talk about that as we continue as well. All right, so it's a free-for-all Friday, but I went NBA heavy to start the show. We'll get you on the radio as soon as we can at 866-240-1065. And we're going to talk again to SB Nation Spurs style, Michael Oehler, poundingtherock.com, about what just happened to the 67-win Spurs last night in Oklahoma City as we continue right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward we roll. It is 3:38. Thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, it is indeed the extravaganza. Greg Popovich last night, post-game press conference, went just pure pop, to say the very
Coach,
least.
Coach, you guys were out of most of the game, but they made a late charge and nearly brought it back. But talk about the game in the second half.
Well, we hung tough. We got great character, and I expected nothing less. We just went to the second half like it's 0-0. And did the best job we could, and I thought our guys were great.
That was the highlight of the Greg Popovich press conference when it came to manners and decorum. Literally, it did not get any better than that. It actually got much, much worse, unfortunately, for a lot of reporters who found out the hard way.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that smart. We just lost. Ask Billy. He'll figure it out.
Go ask the other coach. I don't want to have to answer your questions, essentially.
Who? He did a great job. He actually made three threes, which makes his defense even more special.
That was actually impressive because that's now two out of three questions that weren't completely jerk-like. That one was actually a solid answer about Roberson. Let's continue.
Coach, going into the next series, having Steve with your Steve, obviously, who do you like?
I don't do that.
Coach, would you comment on?
If you missed that, he was asked who he likes in the next series, obviously, as the Thunder move on to take the Warriors. I don't do that, okay?
Could you comment on Tim Duncan and how he's played down the stretch? He's playing maybe his last night.
Here we go.
Why do you say that? Do you know something I don't know?
I don't.
Okay, I just want to make that clear.
Do you know something I don't? I want to make that clear. It went on like this for four solid minutes. I'm not going to do all of them now, all 4 minutes, because I've got a guest who I want to talk about this and much, much more about the NBA playoffs with. But that's what we usually get from Greg Popovich in NBA sideline interviews during games, which he obviously abhors. We got in a post-game interview yesterday, and it has a lot of people saying, why does the NBA allow this? By contract, they are obligated to talk to the media, the coaches after a game and after a series, etc. He lets you know very clearly, I'm only here because of the contract. I don't have any respect for you, your questions, or your knowledge of the game. And we'll leave it at that as we say good afternoon to Michael Oehler, who joins us from SB Nation's official Spurs feed and Spurs site, poundingtherock.com. Michael, how you doing this afternoon?
I'm okay considering. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, I want to be clear with you up front here. I'm a Spurs fan. You know, even though I sit here in Toledo and in northern Ohio, we got a lot of Pistons fans. We got a lot of Cavaliers fans. I'm from Cleveland, so I'm a Cavs guy. But huge respect for Greg Popovich. Massive fan of Tim Duncan, am I. And back in the day when he first came up with David Robinson. So I've got no axe to grind here. I knew I was going to be very happy for the winner of this series and bummed for the loser because I really like both OKC and San Antonio. And I have on my program defended Greg Popovich many times saying, you know what, those stupid sideline interviews are just that. They're stupid. The questions are usually inane. They're irrelevant. And he doesn't like them. And he lets everybody know it, hoping they'll stop making him do them. I've defended him. But I got to tell you, man, last night, asking reporters if they're coaches, asking them if they know things that he doesn't know, just completely demeaning them, man. Do you guys approve of that when you're in the media down in San Antonio?
Well, I think it's one of those things where I saw a stat the other day where since Greg Popovich got hired as a head coach of the Spurs, or, you know, promoted himself really as a head coach of the Spurs, and he used to be the GM, I think there was something like 233 coaches have been hired and fired in the NBA. And I think that really says all you need to know. It's just he has such, job security at this point, just overwhelming success, that it buys them, you know, it affords them the luxury to kind of do whatever he wants. And I
get that. You know what? But Michael, I get that. I know he can get away with it. Five rings says he can get away with it. Nobody's going to fire him. I agree. I'm not saying he should be fired for this. So I'm asking, as media members, do you guys take that stuff personally? Do you get annoyed when you're trying to do your job and ask questions? Maybe you talk to beat writers that cover the team for the papers down there, Michael. And you know, when he answers in such condescending ways, I just want to know if that's cool with you guys. Hey, that's just Poppy and Pop. Or do you get to a point where it's like, man, you know, show a little respect for us like we show for you, Coach?
I think you have no choice but to laugh it off because, I mean, how else how else can you do your job? It doesn't do anybody any good to show displeasure with it, because it's not like he's at an age where he's not going to change. He's certainly not going to change for younger media members. I think as far as his treatment of the media, Pop is a little bit of an ageist, where except like kind of a reverse ageist, where he really pays respect to you know, seniority and people mm-hmm. who've done it for a long time, people he's established relationships with for a long time. And if he sees like TV people or radio people that maybe haven't been around very long, that he doesn't have those kind of relationships with, then, you know, he's probably going to answer questions a little differently than questions where from somebody like Ramona Shelburne or somebody from Jay Abonde, you know, people or a coach like Jeff Van Gundy, you know, people he respects. I think those people would get different answers than just maybe nameless, faceless media people that a national audience might not recognize.
Yeah, I see that. I do. Michael Erler is our guest from PoundingTheRock.com, Spurs SB Nation website on the extravaganza. Bob France here. Jim Cushlin is here, too. You may hear from Cush in a moment or two, Michael. Yeah, I get all of that. And I also understand his frustration with answering questions in the middle of games or coming out of timeouts, you know, because of the TV requirements. And he doesn't want to do that. He wants to focus on his team. I get all of that. And I understand he's frustrated after losing last night. But there comes a point to me, and again, I've defended him so many times, there comes a point where I'm like, hey, man, you know what? These guys are doing their jobs. There's no need to embarrass them as they ask their questions. It's because, as you say, perhaps they don't have enough gray in their hair and haven't been covering this game as long as you've been coaching it. So it's just one of those things.
I would say the only frustration. I'm sorry to cut in. I would say the only frustration in dealing with Greg Popovich is that really there is no winning, because the only kind of questions he will answer are the most general, basic, obvious, broad, you know, questions. Oh, you know, do you think this guy played well? And when it's obvious that, you know, Kawhi Leonard, let's say, played well. But those are the questions he'll answer. But then he'll make fun of you for asking the really basic, obvious, simple question.
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's exactly what we're talking about. You know, the one reporter last night who said, hey, you had trouble on the glass against them again. They really beat you to the boards, which is, of course, in media speak, even though it was a statement, a question saying, can you please expound upon that? What was the problem? How come you aren't able to keep those guys off the glass? We're just looking for a comment for our story here about the rebounding angle. And instead of answering it in the way, you know, knowing that it was intended to be a question despite its phrasing as a statement, he just says, yes, that was the correct statement. They beat us on the boards. And it's just, it's demeaning and it's troublesome and it bothers people. And like I said, I've never let it bother me. But for whatever reason last night, I was just really turned off by it and put off by it because, like I said, I like the Spurs a lot. All right, what happened? That's the next question. As a Spurs guy, and you're right for Pounding the Rock, a Spurs SB Nation site, a 43-point win in Game 1, and then obviously a nail-biter win in Game 3, and wow, what in the world? Three straight losses, including the blowout last night. Did you guys have any sense that the Thunder was capable of doing that to the Spurs?
I think after Game 4, I had a pretty good sense that Oklahoma City had figured out a lot of what the Spurs were doing and a lot of their strengths and weaknesses. Game 1, you almost discount, because Oklahoma City showed an alarming lack of preparation in the game. It's like it was as if they'd never seen LaMarcus Aldridge before, they'd never seen the Spurs before, that they had no concept of transition defense. I mean, Westbrook and Durant in particular were really lazy in that game for whatever reason, getting back on defense. And then ever since then, their effort level ramped way up. They figured out how to stop the pick and pops with Aldridge. And they really exposed the Spurs' depth or lack thereof. The Spurs bench just did not show up this series at all. And, you know, the Spurs had to give up guys like Aaron Baines and Corey Joseph and Marco Bellinelli to have enough cap room for LaMarcus Aldridge. And because they had to give those guys up, it kind of exposed their bench a little bit. There were some young guys in their place who Pop never really showed much faith in the playoffs. You know, they tried getting guys like Kevin Martin, but Popovich quickly realized he doesn't play good enough defense to play, you know, in a playoff series. And Ginobili is 38, and he looked 38 in the playoffs. And Mills just picked a bad time to have a very bad series.
Yeah, but you know what? It's more than just, I mean, because like that game won. I get what you're saying, and certainly the Thunder did not look prepared. I agree with that, Michael. But I don't think it was just that. I mean, it was one of those games where I mean, they were closing their eyes and hitting shots. I mean, if they were unguarded in pregame warmups, they couldn't go 18 for 22, I don't think, from all the places they shot, which they did in the first quarter. So, you know, defense or no defense, they were just unconscious in that first game. And I thought that that really would have dispirited the Thunder. I really did. And instead, when they came back and won game two, with all of its game-ending idiosyncrasies, but when they won game two and the series was one game apiece, at that point, I picked the Thunder to win because they handled that haymaker landed in game one by the Spurs and came back out and evened it by winning on their floor. That's when I picked the Thunder to win this series. I just kind of am surprised that San Antonio, despite all of the stuff you just mentioned about depth, guys they had to give up in order to get Aldridge into the cap, blah, 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 from the talent standpoint, to me, I thought from an experience standpoint, from a Coach Pop, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, the old guard standpoint, that they would have been able to seize upon what they did in game one and really psychologically bury Oklahoma City instead of giving them life.
Well, I think the problem was there was too much old and not enough guard in that old guard. And you know, I mean, they do have some experience together, but you have to consider that Aldridge was there for just this 1 year. And, you know, he hasn't had as much experience playing in these kind of situations and with these kind of stakes as, you know, the Duncans, the Ginobili, the Parkers. And I think if anything, the series kind of showed, you know, what a fickle mistress, you know, the two-point mid-range jump shot is. You know, that's Aldridge's bread and butter. And when it's going in, when he's 15 of 20, it looks great, and the Spurs look unstoppable. But when it's not going in, when he's taking a high degree of difficulty, you know, high-risk, low-reward shots, and when Kawhi Leonard is mostly doing the same thing, where they're taking really long, you know, contested long twos, and then on the other side, you know, you've got Westbrook and Durant getting to the free-throw line, making three-pointers, you know, taking more open shots, and also they draw so much attention on defense that they basically give Cantor and Adams, what, you know, easy layups and dunks that give you 20 points a game right there. It's kind of set up for the Spurs to fail because they're just not getting enough three-pointers. When you look at 2014, they won a championship because they made a bunch of three-pointers. And the Warriors, that's what they do. They make a lot of three-pointers. In 2016, that's what the NBA is who can shoot from outside the best. And the Spurs were trying to win playing this 1990 style of basketball, they kind of caught up to them.
But they did it 67 times. I mean, 67 wins. It's one of the great all-time win totals in NBA history. Now, it got overlooked, of course, because the Warriors went 73. But, you know, that old-school 90s basketball, whatever you want to call it, won a heck of a lot more often than it didn't. And then, of course, in the first round sweep. So, I mean, is it that crazy to think that you have to play or that you don't have to play that 2016 three-point jacking game that the Warriors play, that the Cavaliers have now shown in the NBA's Eastern Conference playoffs that they can play? I mean, they did it right for 67 regular season wins.
They did, but at the same time, I think regular season basketball and postseason basketball are kind of different. I think in the playoffs, teams have time to prepare to lock in on one specific opponent. And even if they look bad in, like, for one game where, you know, you saw Oklahoma City look really bad in that game one, they have time to adjust and make, you know, make moves, figure out which guys are playing well, which guys aren't playing well. And you know, they have a series to find themselves. I think the Spurs have been really good over the years at taking advantage of teams that are unprepared, that don't have time to put scouting reports together, that are coming in, you know, off long trips and back-to-backs and things like that. And their depth prevails during the regular season, and their continuity prevails. But in the playoffs where everybody has equal rest and everybody has equal time to prepare, those things tend to not be as much of a factor to who wins and loses.
Yeah, you know, Michael Erler is our guest, PoundingTheRock.com, a Spurs SB Nation site. I get all of that, and certainly playoff basketball is different, but the irony of that is it used to be anyway that playoff basketball demanded more consistent half-court offense and not run and gun and jack threes. In other words, if you live that way during the regular season, you know, you can best be sure you can die that way in the postseason. You've got to be able to play a more physical brand of playoff basketball where the refs swallow their whistles a little bit more and you take advantage of that by going inside. So I thought that could have played more to LaMarcus Aldridge, Tim Duncan, you know, their strengths to play that half-court game since they're not a bunch of great outside shooters. But it is what it is, and now we look to the next round. Two questions for you. Do you think, as I do, and I said all season long, I predicted that the Warriors championship run would end at one because I thought the Spurs would beat them in the Western Conference final. Now, this was all year long before I changed and predicted that the Thunder would beat the Spurs in this series back when it was a game apiece. So do you think, had they advanced, the Spurs could have hung with and beaten the Warriors in the conference finals? And now that it isn't them, who do you pick will win the conference finals?
Well, you're probably not going to like my answer very much, but I think, if anything, Oklahoma City kind of spared the Spurs from a larger embarrassment on a bigger stage. I think this had the potential of being kind of series, I don't know if you remember, like 2001 was to the Spurs, where the Lakers just steamrolled them for four straight games.
I do remember that, yeah. They beat them by like 40 and 30 the last two games, I think, in that sweep. Didn't they beat them by like 41 game and 30 the other or something like that?
It was pretty rough. Shaq and Kobe in their absolute prime.
Yep.
And that was before Parker and Ginobili were around, so they caught the Spurs in that little window. I just think the Warriors are absolutely, I mean, especially if Curry's 100% and Green, you know, his ankle's not bothering, I think the Warriors are just a completely different animal. And they just scored too many points for the Spurs to have been able to hang with. I think the Spurs defensively can do as good of a job against the Warriors as anybody and hold them to, you know, 105, 100. But at the same time, the Warriors' defense is kind of built to take away all the stuff the Spurs like to do as well. So I think we would have been looking at a bunch of 100 to 85 ball games and at most five games. And I just don't think there would have been all that much drama to it. I think Oklahoma City is slightly more equipped to give the Warriors problems just because they don't seem to have anybody who could really slow down Westbrook. Also, and Durant, you know, both of those guys are kind of matchup problems. And the Thunder seem to be taking defense a little more seriously these days. But at the same time, I still think the Warriors have too much depth, too much three-point shooting, too much ball movement, too much passing. You know, the Thunder don't have anybody like Draymond Green. And they certainly don't have anybody like Curry. And I think it'll be five or six high-scoring, exciting games. But ultimately, I think the Warriors are going to win pretty easily.
Michael Oehler, our guest, he said the Spurs would have gotten rolled by the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals, and maybe the Thunder did them a favor here by sparing the embarrassment. PoundingTheRock.com is the website. Jim Cushing, go ahead, bud.
You know, and thinking one more time about this series that just ended, and obviously going forward, and we'll get to this here in a second, Michael, there's probably some anxiousness among Spurs fans, but I gotta wonder, you know, people love to complain about officials and things, and I don't think either of any of us in this conversation right now think that, oh, that's what caused the series. But I gotta wonder, though, the way it went down, what kind of vibe are you getting from various Spurs fans today? In the context of how many are going back to that crazy, ridiculous, bad officiating at the end of Game 2, which was only the second time all season, playoffs or regular season, that the Spurs lost a home game. Are there fans today that are trying to pin the blame on this whole thing on that? Even though I don't think that would be justified. But what kind of vibe are you getting from that kind of angle?
I'm really not getting. Honestly, I think the fans have been pretty good. I'm not getting that kind of vibe from them at all. Just maybe because Game 6 was so emphatic the other way. I think, you know, that's, we kind of have a recency bias as fans, as media people, where you just remember the very last thing that happened. And Game 6 was so one-sided in Oklahoma City's favor that it's hard to complain about a couple of close losses in Game 2 and Game 5. And I think just overall, if you just want to be fair about it, Oklahoma City, I mean, and Greg Popovich pointed this out, you know, this afternoon in his end-of-year press conference, Oklahoma City had more guys playing well. They had more guys stepping up. Their bench played better than the Spurs bench, and it was the right result in the end. The Spurs, they had their chances to win, but they just didn't have enough people playing well in enough games. And, you know, that's just what it comes down to.
Michael, looking to one series farther, if we can bother you before we go here, because like I told you in the open, obviously here in Ohio, we are in Cavaliers country and Pistons country, and the Cavaliers have not lost, obviously, in the playoffs. They have looked spectacular. They have set three-point records for an individual game of any game, playoff or otherwise, as we know, with 25. And then the 77 they made against the Hawks, the most ever in a four-game series. So they really are starting to look very Golden State-like in that regard. Projecting out to a Golden State-Cleveland final, a rematch of last year, but with a healthy Cavaliers team, who do you like?
Well, I got to admit, I'm a little surprised by how good Cleveland has been. I mean, I thought they would make it to the finals again, but I thought they would have to work for it a little bit. I thought, you know, they would be in a couple of six-game series, and instead, they, you know, especially given the turmoil they've had at midseason, but instead they've completely rolled people, and their three-point shooting has just been mind-boggling. And even though you expect it to regress a little bit, you know, because it has to, I think they are going to give the Warriors, you know, a series. They're shooting. They have too much talent not to give people a series at this point. You have to take it seriously at this point. But my only concern for the Cavs really is it's going to be a dramatic step up in competition to go from the teams that they've played in the Eastern Conference, most likely Toronto in the finals, to all of a sudden going from that to Warriors. It's just going to be a different upgrade in speed and athleticism, in ball movement, certainly in shooting. And I think it's going to take them a couple games to adjust, and that might prove fatal for them.
I think that's a fair point. Certainly, you're going from some of the lesser teams in the playoffs, the eighth-seeded Pistons, obviously, and then the Hawks that are just a bad matchup for them. And we'll see what happens in the conference finals. But just to play devil's advocate, LeBron carried a Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving less roster to six last year. They took the Warriors to six. Maybe I'm just being a cockeyed optimist here, but man, if they can do that without those guys and go to six, I can certainly see them going to seven and possibly even beating them, given the fact that you have two all-stars, two of the NBA's better players at their positions, now actually healthy and ready to rock.
Well, I mean, the Cavs really leveraged what little strength they had available to them at that point with no Love and no Irving. They really slowed the pace down. They played their bigs. They tried to control the glass. And they really switched aggressively on and trapped aggressively on Curry and took the ball out of his hands and really made Draymond Green the decision maker at the top of the key with a 4-on-3. And it took Draymond Green three games to adjust, but then once they finally made that adjustment, the Cavs really had no other answers for them defensively. And also they finally put Iguodala in the starting lineup, and that helped them a great deal too. And you've kind of seen the continuation of that for this year's Warriors team, where they've used that death ball lineup a lot more than they did the year before. And they've made Draymond Green a lot more of a playmaker than they have, you know, last year. And they kind of took the lessons from that Cleveland series and applied them over the full season this year, and you've seen the result.
Michael, if I had more time, I would ask you this to give me an in-depth answer, but I don't, so I'm going to have to ask for a one-word answer. Tim Duncan back next year, yes or no?
No.
He's done. Okay. You know what? So. We're going to have you back on maybe at the end of the season to talk a little bit more about why. He's one of the greatest players, the best power forward of all time, and one of my favorite athletes of all time. And I would love to talk a little bit more about his legacy if that is indeed the case. So, Michael, if you don't mind, we'll keep your contact info and we'll reach out again maybe at the end of the playoffs. Sound good?
Looking forward to it.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you. Michael Hurler, poundintherock.com down there in San Antonio, part of the Spurs SB Nation site. And we'll get a timeout now, top of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. More of your phone. In fact, we got to start your phone calls. We haven't been talking the entire time. We haven't let you talk a little bit yet. So we'll do that next. 866-240-1065 on the ticket.
Westbrook, and they get on the board. Greg Popovich, a very early timeout. Ginobili lost it. Waiters with a steal. Durant inside. Boy, this place is deafening already.
They realize that they have greatness on the ropes, and they're getting it done on the defensive end.
Westbrook way off the brick. Ibaka has to put it back up. Adams right there.
They had a different mindset. We know we have to do to beat this team. They're a great team. They've been winning for 10-plus years at the same pace, and just proud of our guys. Everybody stepped up. Every game, it was different for us. We came out and competed at a high level.
Oh, we didn't dominate the series. I thought, you know, both teams came out, made it a game every game, except for maybe the first and the last ones. It was a grind-out series. It was a playoff basketball every game, and we came out and took on the challenge they presented to us, which was tough. We just played our brand of basketball, man, the same basketball we've been playing all season. This wasn't our championship. You know, we were confident coming in here, happy that we're moving forward, and then we get another opportunity to play again, and we're excited about it.
We had a conversation, and he asked me if I wanted to play, and I told him I always want to play, and he said, all right, go for it. I'll get to that after I get out of here and figure life out.
Not shocked, because we knew that maybe we were going to get away with round one, okay, but whoever we're playing in second round was going to be tough. I guess once you're past those 35, 36, it happens. So I take my time as always. And of course, it's been an amazing run. We all enjoy playing with each other. We've accomplished amazing things. We won 67 games. And of course, it's disappointing when you don't end up you know, winning the last game. But only one team can do it. In 14 seasons, in my case, it happened a lot of times. But I'm still proud of having played with those guys for so many years and winning so many games.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. 866-240-1065 is the number to join us as we get hour number two underway right here on ESPN 106.5 Yon Ticket. It is Friday. That means it's a free-for-all Friday. If you want to stay on the NBA, we can certainly do that. If there are other news, sports stories that you are interested in, that you would like to kick around with us, we can certainly do that as well. There are a number of things. Obviously, the Tigers continue to scuffle, and I mean scuffle, losing to the O's yesterday, as you heard in the report. They got them again tonight, 15-19, four games under, and they had a five-game winning streak, Jim, not too long ago. And they've just
feels like a long time ago.
I know. Well, the seven-game losing streak now followed by what? Two more since then.
Yep.
So seven
out
of nine.
A grand total is 9 out of 10. I counted.
9 out of 10. Oh my goodness gracious! I apologize. It's worse than I thought. And they're four games under 500. Indians are back in action, playing their roller coaster season thus far. They are home tonight to the Twins. And a note there, I think you had this, didn't you, about Chisenhall? Chisenhall is on bereavement, so they called up Tyler Naquin again. Who was, by the way, hitting very well when they sent him down. I really didn't quite understand that. I know they had to make a move for a pitcher, but they sent Naquin, probably just because of options, et cetera. And he's back up with the club, at least for the weekend. All right, so we can talk a little baseball if you are so inclined. There's a lot of basketball to talk about, including more on Pop. I only played part of his four-minute press conference that was, quite frankly, embarrassing. From last night, and I want to talk about this. This is a touchy thing. I don't like getting into race, generally speaking, unless there's a reason to get into race. And I guess anytime, you know, the whole Cam Newton thing, I guess, became about race because some people made it about race. And I'm talking about the post Super Bowl press conference in which he put that hood up over his head so you couldn't see his face, just kind of sat there, sad, sullen, pouty, you know, bitter about the loss, and answered questions very, very short and abruptly, and then eventually said, man, I'm out of here, and left, didn't answer anything else. And come to find out later, we said he heard, you know, through the divider, I guess, the winning press conferences in the other room for the Broncos, and he didn't like hearing it, and it distracted him, it bothered him, blah, blah, blah. But he took a lot of heat for poor sportsmanship, right? Some decided to make that a racial issue. Some said he's only getting criticized because he's a black quarterback. And he, of course, has made a big deal about it, about that himself, with statements he made during the regular season about being a black quarterback who can do all the things he can do. And it makes some people uncomfortable, some people scared. And I thought that was ridiculous, too. But anyway, since he took criticism as a black quarterback for sportsmanship or perceived lack of it in after the Super Bowl, a lot of people today, including on the Lebatard Show, you hear a lot of ESPN radio right here daily on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, Mike and Mike, Dan Lebatard, among them. And they were really hitting this hard, saying, why isn't Popovich being hit harder for his post-game presser yesterday at the end of their series, as their season ended, for treating reporters like jerks? That if he had gotten up and left like Cam Newton, would he have been called out on it as much as Newton was? Why does he get a pass? Why are people laughing at Popovich embarrassing these reporters while they excoriated Newton for being, you know, unsportsmanlike to the reporters? And I don't like that racial aspect of it. Now, to Lebatard's credit, while some who were talking on the program were indeed making it about that, he said that's just one component. The other component might be, as I said at the top of the show, you know, you're a power broker. If you're a power broker in the NBA or in any sport, if you wield a lot of power, you wield a lot of influence. And if you wield a lot of influence, you get yourself a lot of leeway, and you kind of get yourself the get-out-of-jail-free card. You can pretty much do and say what you want. Not too many people are going to question you. Well, few have the power and the job security and the stroke in the coaching fraternities of all the major sports that Greg Popovich does. I mean, he's a five-time champion. Who active has more championships than he does? in any sport. Nobody, right? I mean, Bill Belichick has four. There's nobody in baseball that's got five World Series rings that's still managing, right?
Right.
There's nobody in the NHL.
Not that I can think of.
Scotty Bowman's not there anymore. So he's pretty much got, you know, that this is his domain. So he can do what he wants. And that buys him a little bit of a leash, if you will. But I got to tell you, while I have used that leash to defend him in the past and give him some of that leeway and some of that slack and make your whatever metaphor you want here, leash, slack, et cetera, I was really, really put off last night as I listened to this. It was 4 minutes of discomfort and awkwardness, and I want you to hear it, and I'll let you react to it. Do you think he's getting a pass because he's a white coach, where Cam was a black quarterback, as they were saying somewhat on the Le Batard show today? Do you think he's getting a pass just because of the five rings? Do you think he's getting a pass because he's funny and everybody just killed him? What do you think it is? Because I got to tell you, it really was off-putting to me. And I, generally speaking, I don't have too much of a problem with him blowing off bad questions when he does those sideline interviews he is so notorious for. And he does horrible sideline interviews, as you know. He just gives the reporter a glare and a stare that says, "You're an idiot. Why are you bothering me in the middle of my game?" And then he answers with a curt answer. And they say, "Okay, back to you," to the play-by-play guy. And the reporter breathes a big sigh of relief, like, "Oh, my God, I don't ever want to see him again." You know, people listen to those, and they either think they're funny or they think he's just an obnoxious bore. Well, last night, I think he was an obnoxious bore for four solid minutes.
Coach, you guys were out of it for most of the game, but they made a late charge and nearly brought it back. But talk about the game in the second half.
We hung tough. We got great character, and I expected nothing less. We just went to the second half like it's 0-0 and did the best job we could, and I thought our guys were great in that respect.
What do you think turned the series around for them after game one?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that smart. We just lost. Ask Billy. He'll figure it out.
You know, and again, that is a very legitimate question. They said, "What do you think turned the series around after the way you won game one?" I don't know. I'm not that smart. Ask Billy Donovan. No, we're asking you. Your team won by 43 in game one, and that's then lost four out of the next five games. We're asking you, Coach. You've got to answer that.
Who? He did a great job. He actually made three threes, which makes his defense even more special.
To his credit, that was a legitimate answer about Andre Robertson. And they say, "You know, what did he do? He had a couple of threes, or three of them, obviously, and he just played great defense." Okay, that's how a press conference is supposed to go. Can we sustain that momentum, Coach, of civility and decency?
Coach, going into the next series, having seen both these teams, obviously, who do you like?
I don't do that.
Coach, would you comment on?
I'm going to pause that. I kind of am okay with that.
I am too.
You didn't like the question either, did you?
No, I didn't like that question either.
Right after your team loses, saying, "Hey, do you think this team that just beat you is going to win the next series too?" Essentially, because he said, "Who do you like in that series between Oklahoma City and Golden State?" That is a bad question, and most coaches would have probably not answered it. They might have been a little bit more diplomatic and said, "You know, I don't like to speculate on that stuff. I worry about my team, not other teams." They could have put it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Diplomatically, but they probably wouldn't have answered it either. So when he just said, "I don't do that," I'm not that terribly upset with that one.
I'm not either, and especially when I think of it through the prism of someone like, let's put it this way. Imagine what Stan Van Gundy's response would have been to a question like that.
Oh, I can't, because I never know what's coming out of his mouth.
Exactly.
I really don't. I don't. I mean, he could have done something like that, or he could have gone off the wall and said something really outrageous, and I don't know. But I just know that for Pop, given the question, which is probably not the best question that a reporter is going to ask him in that case, and I try to cut the reporters some slack when they deserve it, not the best question. Yeah, but that was all right.
Another interesting one I want to Another interesting one I want to point out real quick. The question before that, where they were asking about when he was asked about the Thunder's Robinson, yep. And really let's call it what it is, Robertson, basically career game he had in that game last night. He was phenomenal.
Yeah.
I kind of thought that answer was a little condescending, like, "Yeah, that guy can't shoot. Look, he actually made three threes." That's the way I heard it. Even though he actually answered the question.
But I think he's acknowledging it was a surprise. You know, I mean, he's not known for that. He gives us great defense. And he said he made three threes, which really makes his defense that much more special. We got bonus out of him. It's kind of like I'm trying to make a comparison here. and maybe there isn't one that's coming to the top of my head. I'm trying to think of another sport where somebody whose specialty is one thing and then they give you a little bit of something else. It's like, wow, that's bonus, man. You know, that's just extra. You know, if Dikembe Mutombo.
That's exactly the player who I was thinking of, I swear.
Specialty is shot blocking, and he blocks his sixth shot of the game, but he also got you 20
right.
on a rare night. It's like, man, that's bonus right there. I don't think there's anything wrong with that because Robertson, that's not what he's known for. You know, and that's okay. I get it. Let's continue.
I don't do that. I don't do that.
Coach, would you comment on Tim Duncan and how he's played down the stretch? He's playing maybe his last night.
Now here we go with the condescension and the jerk part of this.
To a question he should have known was coming. I mean, everyone's been talking, specifically Duncan, and if not Ginobili and Parker, that this may be the end for them.
I just asked Michael Oehler, not that he's Greg Popovich, but I mean, I just said, hey, you know, everybody wants to know now. Tim Duncan, I mean, first of all, he's a five-time champion. Kobe's a five-time champion. Kobe just quit after his 20th year. Tim Duncan is at his 20th year. Is this it? You know, it's a fair question, a legit question. And you're right, he should have known it was coming. Michael knew it was coming and said, yeah, I think he's done. But Pop, of course, has to embarrass the reporter first.
And how he's played down the stretch. He's playing maybe his last tonight. Or his last tonight.
Why do you say that? Do you know something I don't know?
I don't.
Okay. I just want to make that clear.
I just want to make clear before I tell you how I thought he played that you don't know anything. You don't know anything. The reporter said very clearly the word maybe. Playing maybe his last game. Can you talk about Timmy? Gee, what a horrible question to ask. The coach who has been with him since he was a rookie out of Wake Forest. What a terrible thing to ask. Hey, coach, can you talk about how Timmy played down the stretch and in this what might have been his last game? That's
forget
an absolutely
coach,
perfect yeah. question
and
to
And forget
ask.
Coach since his rookie year. As Michael pointed out to those who, like myself, who kind of have forgotten because so much time has elapsed, Popovich is essentially the guy that drafted him.
Yeah, well, because he was the GM.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, so, I mean, yeah. Hey, after 20 years together here, Coach, that was 87, right?
Yeah, that was the 97 draft.
97, beg your pardon, yes. So the 97 draft, so it's 20 years later. Hey, can you talk about this five-time champion and future Hall of Famer and maybe greatest power forward who ever lived, you know, and what might be his final game? Yeah, well, you don't know that, and I just want everybody to know that you don't know that. Now I'll talk about Tim.
Timmy, he was playing really well. So we played him as much as we possibly could because he earned the minutes. He did a really good job.
And that's the extent of it, by the way. I'll talk about him, but only in the most general, flat, undignified way possible. Timmy played well. He earned the minutes. We played him as many as we could. That's it. You know, again, the guy asked, what about if this is his final game? 99.9% of the coaches in this league, even rookie coaches like Tyronn Lue, would have said, you know what, it's an honor playing with Timmy, coaching Timmy, and watching him work. He did a great job tonight. We don't know what the future holds. I certainly would love to have him back. But if not, you know, he went out the way he always has, playing as hard as he can and playing very, very well. That's what 99% of the rest of the coaches in the civilized world would have said. But Pop had to let the reporter know, A, I don't like you. B, I don't like your question and your suggestion that this might be his last game when you don't know that. And C, I don't have to talk about Tim Duncan right now until his retirement ceremony.
You said before during pregame that you wanted the bench to step up. Is that one of the more shocking developments in this series that you need to get better play, do you think?
We needed to get, overall, we needed to get better play from the bench. That's true.
Justin Edgar, Associated Press. Coach, rebounding has been an issue this series. Tonight, again, seems like rebounding the Thunder beat you to the boards tonight as well.
That's a correct statement.
I mean, what more do you need than that? You know, for now, if you're a nitpicker, and for people in my business, this industry, and I've been doing this for almost two decades, not as long as Timmy's been playing, but just about 19 years. But anyway, yes, technically you don't want to ask a question that isn't a question, that is a statement. And he said, they beat you on the boards. That was essentially what the statement by the reporter was. But we also know in this industry that when a reporter does something like that, they are basically saying, can you comment on the fact, sir, that they beat you on the boards? Can you talk about what it, why it was that they were so consistently quicker and able to you know, take care of that aspect of this game, which played a huge role in its outcome? That's what the question was, without being a question. He very, again, easily could have said, you know what, they did. They got after it a lot more. We did a few things. We made a few adjustments to get in better position, but we didn't get there in time. They just had better athletes. They were faster. Whatever the real answer was. Or even talk about how that's been, that was just a part of the story. That, yeah, not only did they beat us on the board, but then go into something else about half-court offense, defense, or whatever the case might be. Instead, yes, that's a correct statement. You know,
that's a correct statement.
So condescending.
More questions.
And Jim, let me go in as before we go back to the next question. Is this much better than Marshawn Lynch sitting there and saying, "I'm just here so I don't get fined. I'm only here so I don't get." He's essentially saying, "I don't like this. I don't like you. I don't want to be here and answer these questions, but I have to because it's a contractual obligation, and they're going to hit me if I don't." That's essentially, this is no different than Marshawn Lynch, and I don't think he should get any more slack than Marshawn Lynch got. And I don't think he should get any less slack. And I don't think he should get any less slack than what Cam Newton got after the Super Bowl.
Here.
Do you have any regrets about not going smaller earlier?
No, are you coaching now? You should try not to do that.
I know that. I learned that a long time ago.
I want to congratulate.
And I'm just going to blow off your question about my strategic decisions on when I go small and when I go big, because you don't need to write that in your article. I have to embarrass you and point out that you're not an NBA coach, that I am, that you don't have 5 rings, that I do. Now that I've sufficiently embarrassed you in front of the rest of your colleagues here in this interview to tell you that you're not a coach, so you don't dare question me. And mind you, this writer was just doing his job because he probably has to write something for this morning's newspaper, this morning's game story, about the way that the Thunder beat you by double digits, the way that they went up by 28. We need to write about some of the things that happened strategically here. They beat you on the glass. Did that make you regret going small? Or when you went small late in the game and closed the gap, did you regret not doing that earlier so that you could take that advantage away from them? Let's talk about the flow and the strategy of the game and the way things went, sir. Instead, are you a coach? No, I didn't think so. So don't do that. And now I'm going to completely ignore the question and congratulate the Raptors to make myself sound like I'm a nice guy.
I want to congratulate...
Did I say Raptors? I beg your pardon. Warriors, of course. Warriors, I'm 0 for 2. The Thunder. I want to congratulate the guys who just beat us, so I sound like a good guy.
I want to congratulate Billy and his coaches, you know, the players, the organization, from top to bottom, starting with Clay. Great series, did a great job. I'm thrilled for them. And going forward... it'll be a great Western Conference final, but congratulations to the Thunder. They did a great job.
Now, that was supposed to be his walk-off, I promise you. You know, Kush, that was the walk-off.
Sure sounds like it, doesn't it?
I said what I needed to say here. You've kept me here for, at that point, 2 minutes and 30 seconds in this post-game presser. I want out now. Congrats to the Thunder. Now let me out. I said something nice, which is what you've been waiting for. Now let me out of here. By the way, did you notice how what he said about the Western Conference final? He said, "I think we're going to have a great Western Conference final." He was asked that a minute and a half earlier by somebody who said, "What do you think going forward?" The question neither you or I thought was a great question, Jim.
Uh-huh.
But he could very easily have done that to that reporter. He could have just said what he said now to
right.
him and said, "You know what? I don't know who's going to win, but I think it's going to be a great series." He could have said that and not embarrassed the reporter. Instead, I don't do that. And then literally a minute and a half later, he does that. and predicts it's going to be a great Western Conference final. Now let me out of here. He tried to drop the mic, but unfortunately, there were more questions.
Great job.
Do you have any more questions? Right here.
Papa, I don't know if you had already addressed this before I got here, but can you just speak to the disappointment of the 67-15 season and the aspirations that this team had to go further?
Another very, very valid question. You had a phenomenal season, one of the greatest regular seasons of all time. The top, one of the top five, I think, seasons of all time, win total-wise. There's 73 for the Warriors, 72 for the Bulls, and then two or three teams had 69, and then them with 67. It's one of the greatest seasons of all time, and you didn't end up closing it out and you know, making it to the championship at least. Can you talk about how that feels? Let's see. Can we be decent and civil here, or do we need to be condescending?
Well, everybody's disappointed. The only team that's not disappointed is the last team standing. Everybody loses but one.
Yeah, thanks for that deep thought, Coach. We know that everybody loses except for the champion, but not everybody had 67 W's coming into the postseason. That's what makes this a different kind of a question, Coach. Can you answer that? And the answer, of course, is no. I don't have to.
I apologize if I wasn't here, but
no problem. I'm not going anywhere.
Right before the fourth quarter, I noticed you were talking to Tim for a while. You might want to share what you said to him and just what it meant.
Really?
Really?
And again, Jim, right? You've been in interview settings like this.
Mm-hmm.
A very valid question, kind of a follow-up to a previous question of, hey, this might be Timmy's finale here. We don't know, but it might be. And after embarrassing that guy by saying, really, do you know something I don't? Huh? After embarrassing that guy, this guy who came into the press conference late because he was probably interviewing players says, hey, you were talking to Timmy. Can you share what that was about? And that wasn't an attempt to pry on a private moment as much as an attempt to say, hey, this is your star. You've coached for the last 19 years. You know, can you talk about, you know, if this might be the end for Tim, how you feel about that? But of course.
You might want to share what you said to him and just what it meant.
Really? You think I'm going to share what I spoke to Tim about?
Well, there's a chance.
I guess you got to ask.
You
right?
Got to shoot the shot.
You
got to
ask, exactly. It doesn't go in unless you shoot it.
Got to shoot it.
No, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, why would I do that, right?
Pop, obviously the outcome did not come in your favor, but.
That's obvious, yes.
Yeah.
You're right on it, as usual.
I mean, it's just like taking turns, just bang. You know, just shot that guy down, bang. Just shot that guy down, bang. Just shot that guy down. Yeah, thanks. So the outcome didn't come in my favor. You're right on it as usual. It's getting tiresome.
You happy with the fight that your team showed in the fourth
Happy's
quarter?
Not a word that,
I'm
that
sorry.
Really
you, are you,
does
are you
for me.
Satisfied?
I couldn't be more proud of the way we played in the second half tonight. It really showed their character. They didn't hang their heads. They just busted their fannies to do as well as they possibly could, and we met a better team.
And that's where it ends, and that will be the end of it. So, anyway, I bring that up because I feel like most in the media, either in national media or in local markets like this one where folks talk sports with one another, I think we deserve, or not deserve, the wrong word, I think we have an obligation to address these issues. If we address them with one post-game press conference that we find surly and unsportsmanlike, we should address it with all of them. If for no other reason than to kind of put out any fires that people may be starting with respect to race. And, hey, how come Cam, the black quarterback, got excoriated and Pop didn't get called out for this? Well, I'm not calling out Pop because he's a white coach and Cam was a black QB. I'm calling out Pop because that was just undeserved. What he did to the reporters was undeserved. What Pop did was unnecessary. It is rude. It is something that the league should probably address because, again, Jim, I have talked about this many, many times on this program. People often say, in fact, Ron Rivera, the head coach of the Panthers, in defending Cam Newton in this whole thing in the offseason, if you recall, said, I don't think that losing quarterbacks or coaches should have to talk to the media after the game. It should only be the winners who are obligated to do that because it's stupid to make guys who just lost answer questions. I remember him saying that, and I remember saying, are you kidding me? I know you've got to try to have your guys back, but you really don't think that the media is entitled to talk to all of the participants after a championship contest about how they feel, about what happened, questions about plays or decisions that were made in the game, big moments and what their thought processes were so that they can put this stuff in their reports or into their columns or into their game stories? You got to be kidding me. And then when you saw the, what was it, Jim? Was it the NCAA final? Or was it, I'm trying to remember, there was a bunch of college kids. Or maybe it was the national championship game.
No, it was the basketball national championship game. I remember it now because we were talking. This came up the day or two after because of the way they lost.
Football, but
no, it was the basketball one. I distinctly remember this now.
And you got a bunch of kids sitting there just as disappointed that their championship dreams were just dashed. And for the seniors, of course, you know, and the one and done young stars, they're gone. They'll never have a chance to win a championship for their school. Whereas comparatively, Cam, being a young guy, has got another 10 years probably in the NFL to try to get back to a Super Bowl. And I remember saying they had to answer. And they didn't sit there with pouty faces and hoods pulled over and get up and storm away. These young kids answered questions with maturity and responsibility because they know. And getting back to the business side of things, as I pointed out, getting back to the businesses, and this is important, this part of this, the reporters who are there at all of these events, including the ones last night that were embarrassed by Greg Popovich, they are there because they help pay each and every one of these players and coaches. How, you ask? They are the bridge. They're the conduit. They're the liaison, pick your word, between fan and game. And if the fans don't have access to players and coaches, they don't have a connection to the players and coaches. And if they don't feel a connection to the players and coaches, they care less, and they stop coming. The media, and particularly the television media, which pays hundreds of millions of dollars per contract to each league to carry their games. Those media outlets and these reporters who work for them absolutely have earned the right to ask these questions of winners and losers in all of these games. And for Rivera to suggest we shouldn't have to do that, Cam shouldn't have to do that, no. For Pop to act like he shouldn't have to be there, I'm sorry, but no. He absolutely needs to be there, and he needs to stop treating everybody like garbage when he does it. I just find it to be a very important part of the story. We do sports radio, which means we are media. And before I became a talk show host, like so many others before me, including you, Jim Cushlin, you know, we've been reporters as well, and we've been in those situations. We've gone into locker rooms. We've gone into clubhouses. We've talked to managers, head coaches, general managers, players, Hall of Famers and scrubs, starters and backups, and we have to ask questions to get their feeling so that we can tell the story of the game by way of our radio broadcasts or our newspaper columns or whatever the case might be. And so maybe it's a little personal here, but I have sympathy for people who are doing their jobs and are treated like garbage by multimillionaires, including Pop. So that's just that's my rant. I needed to do it. Do we want to do Stevin here before we take a timeout? Let's do that. Stevin in Toledo. Stevin, you are on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Stevin, what's going on, sir?
I can appreciate this topic. It's one of the arguments that's been going on a long time about how, emotional, the emotion that is portrayed after a game. I think is, you know, the media and sports figures and everybody like, they share a kindred. You can't, neither one can survive without the other. ESPN is around because of sports. You know, football, basketball, all popular. Popular sports. So as to say that sport, that the NBA or the NFL needs the media, I think it's both ways. I think that's a two-way street.
Now I'm glad you said that because I was going to jump in and say, whoa. You say ESPN is around because of sports, and I would turn around and say to you, sports are in part as popular as they are and as multi-million dollar generating as they are, multi-billion dollars, because of the creation of ESPN. And of course, all of those that followed it, like Fox Sports 1 and CBS Sports and all of the other major networks that have become a part of this now. These companies make the sports as popular as they are to all of these fans who hear the backstories
Would you agree that ESPN became in existence because of sports like basketball and football? Would you agree? Because the football and ESPN and football and basketball has been around a lot longer than ESPN. Because I was watching basketball and football before ESPN ever came into existence.
I understand that. But here's the thing: back before ESPN and before the 24-hour sports cycle started, Stevin, you got football on game day Sunday, and you got it on Monday Night Football, and that was it. the rest of what you got, you had to look into a newspaper and try to find stories about what happened in that game before, and of course that's hugely limiting, and then you had to wait until the next week. Because of the advent of ESPN and the 24-hour news cycle, and I'm not pumping up ESPN for any reason. I got a lot of problems with a lot of things ESPN does, to be quite frank.
It was just an example.
I'll follow your example and flow with it here. Because of that, now fans got their taste of the NFL on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday and the NBA and more and more and more. And the more taste they got because of ESPN, the more they were into it, the more they wanted to go to games, the more they went to the games, turned the turnstiles, and most importantly, my friend, the more they said, we want to watch more of them on TV. We'll watch it five nights a week if you'll give it to us. And when they got a chance to sell it five nights a week, that money that came from those advertisers through those television networks like ESPN and the others flowed right into the wallets of the owners of the leagues, which, of course, transitioned right to the players, et cetera, and on down the line we go. So, in effect, ESPN and the advent of the 24-hour news cycle, 24/7 news cycle, has grown these guys' salaries to the levels they are now, and they need to recognize it and give the media the respect it deserves for the money they make.
And I would give you that, but here's, I kind of got off the, what my original point was, how do you expect these guys?
Better one than that, because that point was really good.
How do you expect these guys to not be that emotional? I mean, it is an emotional, it's emotional business. And how do you expect these guys? I'm not a Popovich fan, but people like Popovich, Cam Newton, and to name others, Tom Brady and even Belichick they're very bad losers, and they emotionally, they show, and they treat the media the same way. But at the same time, don't you appreciate the realness of that? Because he's expected exactly the way I would expect anybody who care about their team winning or care about losing. Can you appreciate the same thing?
You're kind of all over the place there. And so let me try to make some sense of it, and then we'll move on.
Yes,
I expect them to be very emotional, which is why the cameras want to be there. The camera wants to hear the emotion in their voice. They want to hear anger or sadness or disappointment or joy and exuberance, because that's what the fans want to know.
Right.
The fans want to know the players care about it as much as they do, that they feel.
But at that point, if Pop were to give you anything else, it wouldn't have been real. But you would expect him not to be real.
That's where I'll disagree, because I get real. I got real when Phil Jackson did interviews after championship losses or conference losses. Or I get real. I promise you I'm going to get real if and when Tyronn Lue loses to the Warriors. I'll get real if Steve Kerr loses to the Thunder.
Popovich wouldn't give you – it wouldn't have been real if he'd have gave you anything else – than what he gave you. Say he was had intentions of coming out and
no,
being
similar. You're suggesting, Stevan, but you're suggesting that if you use decency and treat other people with respect when you give your answers, that they won't be real answers, that we won't get feelings. You can give real while still also not embarrassing the people asking the questions.
Well, how do you know it's real? Somebody say, okay, well, he's a very good sport, or is he just telling you what you want to hear?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Because there was a big comparison made after the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, of course, who won the Super Bowl. You've seen Peyton Manning. You know his playoff record is not sparkling. Peyton Manning, most of his seasons, he won two Super Bowls in what? How many years did he end up playing? Like 18 years.
Right.
He won two Super Bowls, and that means 16 times out of the 18 times he had to, and I think he made the playoffs in almost every freaking year. After a playoff loss, he had to go before that podium and answer all of the questions the media had. Now, and this is just one example, he never appeared before one of those cameras without a suit and a tie, dressed and ready to answer every question with every deep thought that he could possibly muster. Despite his sadness, his desire to be real would probably be to say, I'm not going in there. I just lost in the AFC Championship game again, or I just lost to Brady again, my arch rival. I want to be alone. I want to go sit down somewhere and be alone. I don't want to go in there. But instead of taking that attitude in there, he went in there, composed himself, like almost everybody else does, and says, all right, I'll answer all your questions, let's go. And I'm going to give you as deep and as real answers as I can without cussing and screaming the way I probably feel like doing right now because I just lost another playoff game. That is what fans and reporters expect from players. Give us real, but within the context of decency and sportsmanship, like has been done by virtually, you know, everybody else since these games began.
Well, yeah, and everybody's not capable of that. Just like not everybody in NBA can shoot free throws. So I wouldn't expect it from everybody, though.
Well, and you're right. You can't expect it from anybody, including a guy like Pop, and that's fine. But that also gives us the I don't want to say the license, but it's fair game for us to say, you know what, we ought to be able to get that from you, Coach. Coach Popovich, there's a whole lot of people who are mad that they lost. Your team, your players in there are probably just as upset as you are, and they're standing at their lockers in towels after a shower after their season ended, answering reporters' questions with more dignity and with more decency than you are. You know what? If you want to act this way, fine. We can't make you act any other way, but we can also criticize you for it. And I think that's what's fair to do, my man. All right, Stan,
I yield to you, sir, and I appreciate the conversation.
Oh, of course, my friend. Anytime you call, we'll have a great conversation. Always. Thank you. But I got to get out and get a sports report here before we wrap this up and turn it over to Mike Miller for Drive Time right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And we are indeed getting close to wrapping it up right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, I threw a question out there on Twitter a short while ago, which, of course, you need to follow us at Sports Radio 106.5. Sports Radio 106.5 is our Twitter feed. It's the only place I will tweet sports takes from. FYI, if you find me on Twitter, and a lot of people do, and they say, all right, let's talk some sports with Bob. Now, not on my Twitter feed, because you're going to find a bunch of stuff that you may not like, because it's going to be mostly politics. So I do politics on one, and I do sports radio and sports takes on Sports Radio 106.5 on Twitter. So make sure you follow that, and we'll have the conversation. Anyway, about an hour ago during the show, I was reading another story during one of our breaks about LeBron, and it's the follow-up on what we talked about yesterday. Jim, you recall how upset he was. Well, not upset. You recall his statement about Steph Curry becoming the first unanimous MVP in league history. And LeBron made a point of saying, yeah, well, you know, you can't argue with the numbers, but MVP doesn't necessarily mean the best player. He said at the beginning of his comment, and at the end of his comment, he kind of doubled down and said,
everybody loses but one.
That's not it. That's Pop. Let's get back to LeBron. Here we go.
Really any debate over that, really, when it comes to that award. But when you talk about most valuable, then you can have a different conversation. So he
labored at the beginning and at the end of a 30-second comment or a 40-second comment to say, you know, most valuable doesn't mean best player. Then he said, by the way, Steph deserves the award. Then he said, yeah, when it comes to that award, he does. But, you know, when you describe most valuable, then it's a different conversation. So clearly, you know, he's not real thrilled that Steph is the MVP unanimously. And come to find out, this is later from today. A follow-up, and it's kind of a time warp thing here. If you recall, in 2013, when he was still with the Heat, LeBron was the MVP, his fourth of his four MVP awards thus far, by the way. And he was one vote away from being unanimous that year. And quoting Michael Wallace of ESPN, LeBron said at the time, it's probably a writer out of New York that didn't give me the vote. He said that during the award ceremony. I know the history between the Heat and the Knicks, so I get it. Then he said, I tried harder to win Defensive Player of the Year than I did MVP. That's my goal. Coach Spoelstra had me guarding every position, and we'll try again next year. So clearly, winning awards is big, big time on LeBron James' list of priorities. Clearly, he wants rings, but this stuff means something to him. Winning awards, Defensive Player of the Year, MVP, and now unanimous MVP. By the way, the reality in 2013, if anybody is wondering, is that the vote for that did not go to LeBron, the one vote that did not go to LeBron for first place in the MVP balloting came from a Boston writer, Boston Globe writer Gary Washburn, who voted that year for Carmelo Anthony, just to throw it out there. But at any rate, that kind of revealed itself today, because according to Chris Haynes, covering the Cavaliers practice out in Cleveland of Cleveland.com, LeBron James said, quote, I was heated. But I knew it all along that I wasn't getting the unanimous vote. I just knew it. It pushed me harder, that's all. It motivated me further. So he's saying I was heated. And heated is, I don't think, a euphemism for the Miami Heat. I think he means ticked, okay, or pissed, if I may, that he didn't get the unanimous vote. Now when he sees Steph getting that unanimous vote that he was denied in 2013, now we know why he said what he said yesterday. You know, kind of congratulating and acknowledging Steph's greatness while also saying, yeah, but you know what, I'm still better, kind of a thing. Now we know why. He really wanted that unanimous vote in 2013, didn't get it, and now somebody else does. And to him, even though they're not to anybody else, but to him, that's a little knock on his legacy, that he didn't get that one, where he's the only player ever to be unanimous, and somebody else did. So my Twitter question was, and remains, should LeBron stop talking about MVP awards and just focus on winning? Do you think this can be a distraction to the Cavaliers' mission? And obviously, as the music is playing, the show is over. We can't talk about it here, but the conversation can indeed continue on Twitter. So follow us on Twitter. I like to do that before and after the show and pretty much all day long. Sports Radio 106.5 is the handle. On Facebook, it's 106.5 The Ticket. And answer that question, and we'll carry on the conversation with one another well into the weekend. All right, that's it. That's all the time we've got. Great stuff. Appreciate the work, Jim Cushlin. Thanks to our guest, of course, Michael Erler. And thanks to you for listening. Monday afternoon, 3 o'clock. Let's get back together and do it all over again. Hopefully we'll have the Eastern Conference Finals set by then, and we'll do a little preview then as well. Have yourself a great weekend. We're out.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.